Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this first day of summer, where it definitely feels like the first day of summer. It's hot. We're going to delve deeply into the world of remarkable science this hour of the program. Rhonda found this story last week, and we thought, well, let's talk about it. It's a big deal. It's a five-year federal endeavor, the Human Microbiome Project, and it's compared to the Human Genome Project. 200 scientists at 80 institutions sequenced the genetic material of bacteria taken from nearly 250 healthy people, and they discovered more strains than they had ever imagined, as many as 1,000 bacterial strains on each person. Each person's collection of microbes would be different from the next person's, and they found that genetic signatures of disease-causing bacteria are lurking in everyone's microbiome, but instead of making people ill, these disease-causing microbes simply live peacefully among their neighbors. This has huge ramifications and may have a lot to do with how we either prevent or treat disease. The results were published last week in Nature, for those of you who want a complete analysis of this. And we have two guests with us this hour to talk about this huge federal endeavor. Professor Owen White is a professor of epidemiology and public health and associate director of the Institute for Genome Sciences at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Professor White, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello. Hi. It's great to be here on behalf of the whole consortium.
It's great to have you here. Also joining us is Dirk Havers, group leader of the Microbial Systems and Communities at the Broad Institute of MIT and also Harvard. And Dirk, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen. It's definitely my pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. All right, gentlemen, we have a lot to cover. Let's just start with the Human Microbiome Project, when it got started and what the mission was early on. Professor White?
Yeah, let me just say to all your listeners that I'm tweeting lots of information, so if they have a chance to follow along, I'd encourage them to do that.
All right.
The Human Microbiome Project, which we frequently call the HMP, as you mentioned, was the product of 5 years of research, and it involved way too many institutions to list here. There was a collection of people that were involved with the clinical sampling, as well as generation of the DNA sequence, and also a very large group of people that were associated with the analysis. The analysis required for this project involved a lot of different investigators and development of some new and exciting techniques that were an absolute joy to work with, I have to say. The project really represents basically kind of the largest and deepest survey of all the bacteria that live in association with humans. And what we did was we started out with on the order of about 250 volunteers who spent the better part of a day being probed from just about anywhere you could stick a Q-tip. And we pulled out small biological samples, for example, with skin, and then would extract the DNA, run that through the DNA sequencing facility, and perform the analysis. The purpose of this was to really generate a baseline study of looking at healthy individuals. So we used a lot of criteria for defining what it meant to be healthy. So we developed ranges of things like body weight or if they had a fever recently or if they had taken antibiotics, you know, they'd be excluded from the project.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was just like if we wanted to understand what would be the temperature of a person's body? That was sort of reflective of somebody who is healthy. You'd get lots of volunteers, and you'd measure their temperature, and you'd kind of look at the range of temperatures that would be exhibited. And then what that allows you to do is, when somebody else might come into the clinic, and when they're sick, you could say, okay, these people seem to exist outside of that range. And, mm-hmm. and this project was very similar to that.
Mm-hmm. Had anybody ever done a study before, Haver, of all the bacteria that's in or close to the body? Did we have any idea how much bacteria there was?
So I think this definitely has been a topic that has been on people's radar for a little while. I think what makes it very special here in this particular project is that, first of all, technology has suddenly switched so much forward, and we were able to use the latest, newest technologies for generating far more data than ever before on these kind of samples. I think that's one huge distinction. Second one is that the size or the number of people, in addition to the simultaneous collection of the different sites, I think that's make this project also distinct from what else has been going on. So there's a bunch of projects out there that basically have sampled one body site in 100 people or went on to collect 27 sites of a handful of people. So here we're talking about 15 to 18 different sites from 250 different people. So it's really a gigantic increase in the number of samples that we've done thanks to the support of NIH here.
Mm-hmm. And if we know, after we sampled all of those healthy people, if we know what the ecological niches are in healthy people, then the idea would be that we'll be able to better understand what has gone wrong in diseases that have a link that is a microbial link. Is that fair to say, Professor White?
Oh, certainly. That's the purpose of this study is, you know, to basically just to form this baseline. But there's been a lot of tantalizing studies so far looking for the link between the microbiome and things like skin diseases or obesity. There's a number of studies associated with looking at vaginal health and a number of other different areas. And if you think about it, there's been years of studying infectious diseases associated with things like sore throats or just about, you know, anything that you're familiar with. And those are not bacteria that are just single bacteria. They're collections of bacteria that are probably operating in cahoots with each other. So there's plenty of studies that going all the way back to kind of Pasteur, really, that you could consider to be microbiome studies.
Mm-hmm. How many different kinds of bacteria? I said it was something like 10 million, which is hard to fathom. We have 10 million kinds of bacteria in us or floating around us?
Yeah, this is the point that people really should be contemplating is that one of the favorite sound bites of the microbiome project is to say that there's actually far more bacterial cells in your body than there are human cells.
Goodness.
Now, it's a little confusing because bacteria are much, much smaller in size. So while there is about 10 times as many bacterial cells as human cells, because the human cells are much larger, you can't quite necessarily see them. Another interesting fact is that the body carries on the order of about 2 to 5 pounds of bacteria with it.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah, that's really something. We're carrying around 2 to 5 pounds of bacteria.
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably mostly located in our gut. There is a large preponderance of bacteria that are sort of lining our intestinal wall. And that may account for an awful lot of it, but it's also just about any surface and any kind of cavity that you can think of has bacteria living there.
Yeah, so it's in our gut because we ate it. It came from somewhere else, some other kind.
Well, so that's a very interesting question. How is it that the bacteria that are growing with us, how does it start to colonize? And some of the studies that I find the most interesting are the ones that are looking at colonization of the gut and the rest of the body starting from infancy. And there's a lot of very interesting evidence that when you pass down the vaginal canal, And when you start breastfeeding, that's when it all starts. And this is really important because it looks like there's a close relationship between kind of stimulating the immune system and prepping you for being ready to take on the assault of bacteria that we find in the environment, starting from just the first days of when you're born.
Hmm. And what happens if you were born cesarean and if you were not breastfed?
Well, this is just fascinating area of study. There's a lot of tantalizing studies right now that have demonstrated a link between cesareans and things like obesity.
Really?
Yes. And I just find this absolutely fascinating. Now, we can't go so far as to say that the causative agent is the microbiome, but you can certainly imagine that when you start seeing an increase in body weight of infants who are born by cesarean, it's pretty easy to imagine that it's probably the fact that these infants were not exposed to the same type of microbiome that they would if they had been born naturally. And the idea is that the diversity of bacteria that are found in the gut may be playing a very significant role in helping you able to metabolize food in a way that may be kind of more natural or more efficient in terms of how we process that food.
Oh, that's
so fascinating. These studies are really interesting.
So go a step further, and if we were trying to combat obesity, and we had this link between obesity and cesarean birth, how do you change that? How do you tackle the obesity, knowing what you know about bacteria?
Well, there's now a very rich area of research having to do with probiotics. And there's, I have to say, first off, that as a scientist, some of the probiotic information that's out there is not so scientific, and I think that this is going to be a very, very active area of research, and you can imagine that there may be very straightforward ways to look at healthy collections of bacteria and inoculate, let's say, babies that are born by cesarean to help prepare them for prepare their immune system for to be ready to take on the assault that we receive from the environment, as well as prepping their gut to help them be able to metabolize more effectively.
That's fascinating. If you would please, Dirk Havers, give us an idea of all of the research that's going on in institutions all over the country as a result of the publishings of this five-year finding. What are people doing, and we can't talk about all of them, there are too many, but what are people doing now?
Wow, that's a giant question to cover, Kathleen. So let's see. One very interesting thing is that five years ago when HMP was being designed, I think there were a number of labs interested in this. And one thing that we really have seen, and I think is part of a great success of HMP, is that the interest and the awareness of the importance of microbiome research has increased tremendously. Mm. And so right now, there's so many different people that basically are excited and starting to venture in this area of research as well. And it's astonishing to just see how many different topics are coming out in the press and links between microbes and health or disease, or when you suddenly lose your balanced microbiome and it causes associated with any sort of diseases. To give a couple of examples, I'm particularly excited about hearing things like how the gut microbes talk to your brain. These are experiments with mice. They see that more introvert, shy mice that are sitting in their corner of the cage, if they are swapped with a gut microbiome from a more adventurous extrovert mice, that introvert mice can become more extrovert.
Oh my goodness!
These are realizing that those trillions of bacteria that live in and on us could basically be affecting our health, but also maybe our odor or maybe our behavior. These are just very exciting topics to where people are, I'm sure, venturing in, and we'll be seeing some great things coming out.
I would imagine. And what about, how is it related? We've been hearing these reports lately about overuse of antibiotics in this country and becoming antibiotic resistant because of the overuse. There's a link to that, isn't there, that some of this research may help us in fighting disease without the use of antibiotics? Am I wrong about that?
So I think, thanks for bringing up antibiotic resistance, because that's definitely also a great topic of interest here in this field. What experiments that have been done in healthy people that are being put on an antibiotic cure or treatment and followed over time, they're basically the composition of the microbes in their guts, what the researchers have been seeing is basically that the microbiome within the gut completely gets changed because of the antibiotics. Obviously, that is the goal. You're trying to hit a certain organism, but what's happening, instead of this one organism that you're trying to get rid of, you're changing the whole microbiome in the gut. And typically, after some time, and we're talking about days to weeks, that slowly can recover to more or less the state where you were before, but not always necessarily exactly that state. And so what you can imagine is that hitting the microbiome that is there for you to protect, and remember, the gut, if you basically would lay out your entire gut and all the different villi and small structures of the gut, you actually have a surface that is as large as a football field.
Oh.
So there's a football field of interaction between bacteria and your human body. So those bacteria that are there are not only helping us with digestion, but also protecting us from a whole bunch of bacteria that can do far more harm than good. So thinking a little bit more about how the use of antibiotics is affecting that protective layer is worth in investigating further. And then, so these were kind of studies that were done in adults. There's also a great interest in infants, and Owen already kind of highlighted a couple of pieces there, pointing out how the development of the microbiome seems to be happening in the early phases of life. You can imagine that using antibiotics, which obviously is crucial in many occasions for the health of the children, can have an effect on how that microbiome is being developed.
Hmm. Do you want to respond to anything that Dirk said, Owen?
Oh, no, just to amplify on the fact that with respect to something like antibiotics, I think, you know, obviously we need to be very careful. neither Dirk or myself are medical practitioners, and we wouldn't want to say anything that's sort of counter to what type of advice that you're getting from those professionals. I think the important thing is to recognize that there simply may be long-term impacts from something like antibiotics, especially possibly at an early age, where you're really resetting the whole microbiome system in a way that over the course of natural history, we're really not familiar to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a good time to be kind of careful. There's a long time industrial practice of using antibiotics with raising meat. And the mechanism for how the antibiotics helped increase the body weight of cattle was not particularly clear, but it seemed to be having some type of impact. And you can imagine that impact of raising the weight of cattle may also be similar to something that would happen in mammals, or all mammals.
Mm-hmm.
and all people. And so we just, you know, these are the types of things for us to be considering very carefully.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guests are talking about this Human Microbiome Project. It has been compared to the Human Genome Project. Hundreds of scientists sequenced the genetic material of bacteria taken from about 250 people who are healthy, and they discovered more strains than they had ever imagined. It was a five-year federal endeavor, and it has all kinds of ramifications, which we're learning about right now. We're welcoming phone calls, although I haven't taken any yet. I'm going to change that right now, should you choose to call us. Owen White, professor of epidemiology and public health and associate director of the Institute for Genome Sciences at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. And Dirk Havers, group leader of microbial systems and communities at the Broad Institute of MIT and also Harvard. Here is our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and you can also leave messages at the Facebook show, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor White also said that he is, Rhonda, help me with his tweeting about all of this. So Rhonda's going to write to me about how you access all of that, because I read tweets. I don't know how to generate them, but you can link through our Facebook page. There we go. I know about the Facebook page. So those of you who are really, holy Toledo, the lines just went nuts. So go to our Facebook page and you'll get more information for those of you who really want to follow this closely, and I'm sure many of you do. To your phone calls momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Christopher Hayes will be joining us, a very sharp political analyst and somewhat of a philosopher, I would say. He's written a book. He, of course, does the Up With Chris show on MSNBC, and he's an editor-at-large for The Nation magazine. He's written a book about why it is that all of our institutions seem to be failing us and what that means. The book is Twilight of the Elites, America After Meritocracy. That's tomorrow at 10. At 9, we'll be talking with some of the nuns on the bus. All right, let's go to phone calls for our guests, starting our calls with Joshua in Richland Center. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, good morning to you, folks. Calling with a comment and a question. Comment is, I find this fascinating, knowing the history of human civilization, that we have always lived, or up until the Industrial Revolution, close to nature, eating foods that are fermented as a preservative also to the foods. So it's quite fascinating that I find people find this fascinating and new. But the thing that I wanted to ask in the study is that within the last 200 years or so, we have highly changed our environments that we find ourselves in. Most people live in the city using antibacterial soaps, eating foods that are very new to the human palate. And then we have groundwater issues with, you know, atrazine, chemical runoffs, things found in drinking water. And I'm just wondering, have people really considered what this is going to do to the bacteria within their body, considering it's an ecosystem in itself? Is it going to throw it into chaos? Is it throwing it into chaos? And that's why we're seeing all these diseases coming up. So I'm just wondering if anyone has looked at that in the study.
Yeah, it's a good question. Owen?
Dirk? I think it's a great question, Joshua. This has definitely been something of interest of a number of people that we have been talking to recently and are venturing into new collaborations. I don't think the data set that we currently have generated within the HMP is particularly designed to be able to address this question. But what you're pointing out there, that we basically have been evolving over the last couple of years from more isolated, we take care of our own food, towards this more complex civilizations, somehow must have a great impact on our microbes as well. And, you know, trying to link that with the kind of observation that we're currently seeing, where the number of eczemas, asthmas, and other inflammatory diseases is picking up much faster than you would have expected, is a great topic of interest. And so the kind of things that we can do here is basically some research that is ongoing with Maria Gloria in Puerto Rico, and Rob Knight and Marty Blazer in NYU. There are still cultures living very isolated, for example, in the Amazons in Venezuela, where people can go back at this point and do a comparison across a level of or a gradient of acculturation and basically compare the microbes of these people versus the microbes in, let's say, people from New York City. And I think there's some fascinating early pieces coming out. Maybe I want to be a little bit careful not putting these out here, but I think one thing that we saw yesterday here at the American Society of Microbiology conference definitely is interesting. The E. coli that are so often in our guts, it turns out that we cannot isolate here E. coli without resistance genes in our civilizations anymore. But those people that live fully isolated and have not seen any antibiotics, they seem to be free of antibiotic resistance genes at this point.
Interesting. So,
I think that's a great question, Joshua. Thanks.
It is, Joshua. Thank you so much for the call. Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I have a question. I recently read an article about immune diseases and acquiring them later in life and how they can be acquired through the birthing process, and the position of birthing in particular, like psoriasis or skin-related chronic diseases, and if there's any, if you've seen or any connection between the two. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Who wants to take Owen? It's your turn.
Yeah.
You want to?
So the study that we conducted that was certainly not looking at that. And but I would also I would say that these are the early days, and these are very exciting times. Where, for example, the cesarean studies, where they're looking at a relationship between obesity. I wish I could have found the connection or the scientific article. I believe there's also a study of the relationship between cesareans and autism. And it's these studies where they didn't look at the microbiome specifically, but it's awfully hard to imagine that the microbiome and the exposure of the child to the mother's microbiome is not playing a role here. There was a study that looked at how, as a woman becomes pregnant, her vaginal microbiome starts to change, and it's very easy to imagine that some of the ways that it's changing is essentially preparing for the day when the child would be exposed to this microbiome. And the clear connection, or it's also, let me just say, very easy to imagine that all this has a lot to do with the host immune or the immune system of the child, where we already know that the mother's milk plays a big role in sort of prepping the child's immune system. And we can imagine that anything in terms of stimulating the gut immune system could be having an enormous impact and long-term impact. All of that is essentially patterning into a system that you hold on to for the rest of your life. So
remarkable.
It's just an exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the point is in the very near future, we're going to know so much about the role of the microbiome and its long-term impact.
And is this new? I have all these pieces of information as I've been reading about this. One of the dominant species in the vagina of a pregnant woman is Lactobacillus johnsoni. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's usually found in the gut, where it produces enzymes that digest milk an odd species to find proliferating in the vagina, to say the least. But during delivery, the baby will be coated in this bacteria and ingest some of it, preparing the infant to digest breast milk.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
It can't, isn't it just, it's just,
yes,
it's just wonderful. And it, and the I sort of feel like one of the most exciting things about the microbiome is that we're for the first time, not for the first time, but it really, it's so, there's such tangible examples of things that we knew were floating around for so long. The idea that breastfeeding is, would be a good idea, or that natural childbirth might be a good idea, or thinking a little bit about probiotics and how eating something like yogurt may have a positive impact on you. And there's a sort of, we're coming out of the intuition phase of our understanding of ourselves and how we live within, in association with the rest of the environment. And we've got this really incredibly tangible method now, DNA sequencing, and looking at the cells that live in association with humans to sort of move us out of this sort of intangible or intuitive stage of our understanding of ourselves. Mm.
Well, you guys were born at the right time, weren't you?
Dirk and I are so fortunate. We are just, these are really good times.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Yeah. Couldn't be more exciting for people in your field. Elizabeth is next in Sister Bay. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. I am also crazy excited about all of this. A couple of things that come to mind right away, and I've been paying attention to this for years. I go on PubMed, and I can get lost on there and discover it's 4 in the morning, and there's all kinds of cool stuff if you just start searching some of the right terms. The fetal sheep study. There's a study out there, I know that it's on PubMed, where a fetal sheep was delivered specifically so that it would be in a totally sterile environment, and it had no immune system because it had no microbiome in its gut. You know, we understand that the microbiome of the gut is a director of the immune system. And we have autoimmune diseases in our family, and I'm really big on homemade yogurt and all of the good stuff. However, I am wondering if there's anything suggesting that we may have targeted probiotic therapies for probably more likely prevention of some of these autoimmune diseases, but even potentially curing some of them. Anything out there where I could go and read more?
Hmm.
So, Elizabeth, I think thanks for the question. Immune disease is one topic of high interest within the Broad Institute. In the past couple of years, we have been looking from a genetics angle, and there's this growing awareness that in addition to your genetic predisposition for a certain immune disorder, there is also an environmental component, and there could be so many different aspects to that with a growing awareness of the microbiome being a piece to that. But I think in this particular area, there is at this point not gone all the way from a finding to something that's therapeutic. There is a different example that I'd like to bring out here that is particularly exciting, I think, in this context, the Clostridium difficile. Now, what's happening is that people could be enrolled in a hospital for some reason, getting an antibiotics treatment. As mentioned before, that has an impact on your gut microbiome, making you potentially more vulnerable for organisms infecting you. And so we see an increase of people that are being treated with antibiotics in the hospital of getting Clostridium difficile infections. Now, it's called difficile because it's really tough to get rid of. It's causing heavy diarrheas, and it's just trying to find treatments for that has been difficult, and the best solution that now is coming up with a 94% success rate seems to be stool transplantations. Trying to recover a healthy microbiome in these people, to just slap that unbalanced microbiome back into a balanced state, seems to be very, very efficient in treating this particular infection.
Fascinating.
So,
yeah.
I don't want to make any extrapolations from here to treating other immune disorders, but I think it's a very interesting related example here.
Obviously, Elizabeth is wanting to read as much as she can on all of this. Where can she go, Owen, other than her PubMed site?
Well, first of all, let me just lavish praise on Elizabeth for using PubMed. What a wonderful example of somebody who wants to understand more about health. And I just tweeted a link to PubMed if people are interested.
Great.
PubMed is the actual scientific literature, so you have to be kind of prepared to really wade through that stuff. There is now a lot of different resources associated with the microbiome that you can simply just Google search for microbiome. This morning I went to the news portion of Google and searched on microbiome, and there were a lot of great articles that are coming from Time or New York Times, and those are going to be great starting points for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the NIH is also collecting different articles, and so I think if you search on the keywords NIH and microbiome, you're also going to find information that way.
Mm-hmm. I think the Times has done some really good giving us understanding, people like me who don't have scientific backgrounds, and Scientific American has a cover story this week on your inner ecosystem in your body. Bacteria outnumber your own cells 10 to 1. Who's in control? It's the June issue of Scientific American. All right, two other phone calls. We have many of them. A lot of interest in this topic. Kellen in Marshfield. Hi.
Hi. I just want to say this is a fascinating program, and thank you so much for offering it. There are a couple of questions I have. One was, could you reiterate again how many pounds of bacteria we're carrying around in our gut? And also, I found it amazing the square footage of area that the bacteria reside in. But I can't really appreciate the magnitude of the task here in information system resources. It must have been very intensive use of equipment and computer storage and processing to map this out. And in addition to the DNA sequencing that you're performing, are you also performing, was the technology MALDI-TOF spectrometry used in identifying these strains? Thanks, and I'll take the
comment. Wait a second. Here. What was that word you used?
MALDI-TOF.
What is it?
I'll handle that.
All right.
So, first of all, MALDI-TOF is a mechanism for looking at proteins. So you could take a bacterial sample, maybe collected from the gut or somewhere else, and run it through a MALDI-TOF machine and look at all the metabolites and the proteins associated with that sample. And you could look at, for example, a sample from a healthy subject and somebody who's got, let's say, Crohn's disease, and take a look at the differences in the proteins that you may find there.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly appreciate him bringing up the data management associated with this. The DNA sequencing technology that's used now is generating terabytes of data. And I am the fortunate soul to be running the project called the HMP Data Analysis Coordination Center. And we did a lot of the data processing, as well as working with a much larger research community that was also contributing a lot to that. Just to give you an example, the amount of data that comes from one single sequencing run is that file. In order, it comes out as a compressed file. To uncompress the file and to just count all the nucleotides, just the single bases that are associated with it, and then recompress it, takes a half an hour.
Oh my!
And so, if you've got 750 samples, we had to deploy all the samples out on our computer grid just to count all the nucleotides, let alone sort of assembling them into larger contiguous bits of information and finding all the genes and comparing those genes against the public archives. We burned a lot of coal in order to generate the data that went into this project, and it's something I personally am particularly proud of.
Mm-hmm. And he wanted again to be reminded it was, did you say, 2 to 5 pounds of bacteria? Is
That's
that right?
That's right. Yep, 2 to 5.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the actual numbers, but another just, I know, you know, for example, if you wanted to know all the different bacteria that were inside of a gram of soil, for example, it's 10 to the ninth. It's a, you know, 10 with a lot of zeros after it. And that's another interesting aspect of this is just not the sheer weight of things, but the total number of genes that we were finding. The number of genes that we found certainly outnumber the total number of genes in the human by about a hundredfold, if not more. And so there's just a whole lot that's going on out there that we're just starting to discover.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Brad. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. The guests have been focusing on bacteria, but there are other types of microbes that inhabit the human body, such as fungi and yeasts. And I was wondering, in people that have excessively high levels of antibodies to candida or yeast, could the guests recommend any sorts of probiotic strains that might be helpful in reestablishing the proper balance between bacteria and yeasts in the body if the person suspects that those yeasts might be causing ill toward symptoms, such as colitis or IBS?
All right, Dirk?
Yeah, Brad, thanks for the question. I'm not sure if I'm going to have an answer for you on the second component, which is obviously, you know, it's a great example of where the kind of things that we are seeing coming out has so great potential, and thinking about how to translate the discovery area phase of projects like these towards treatments or therapies that are using that kind of information, I think is a great next phase that I'm excited to venture into. Let's see, your first part of the question was how about other organisms? And I think even though we had multiple approaches applied, we have applied multiple approaches of looking at the microbiome in this project, and one of those approaches was definitely bacterial-centric. There also has been an approach that was more open to seeing any type of organism, and for any more knowledgeable people that are reading PubMed here, I'm talking about metagenomics or shotgun sequencing here. It gives you an insight on just any organism there, and I think we see most of it is really bacterial, but yes, there's definitely a lot of eukaryotes out there, and viruses, the bacteriophages, are very key in this whole ecosystem that will need a lot of additional attention to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So one interesting piece here is that when looking at the gut microbiome, and we're trying to figure out what kind of organisms are living there, when we use this unbiased approach, it was hard to be able to tell apart which micro eukaryotes were living there or which ones were actually the food that we were eating. So other body sites obviously don't have that problem, but we could tell when someone had a pizza mushroom the evening before.
You could. More phone calls in a moment. If you've been trying to get through, it's been a very busy hour. There are lines open right now. We, this hour, are talking about the Human Microbiome Project. It's a research collaboration that is mapping for the first time the microbes that live in and on the human body. It's a massive project. It is 5 years of a project, and the results have just been published just recently. You can find them in Nature magazine, and our guest recommends, just Googling this. He's also tweeting things, so those of you who are keenly interested in this, and more will be, it's just a field that we're just learning, so it's just going to be exploding in the next couple of years, right? So you can go to our Facebook page because one of our guests is tweeting information all the time. Our guests this hour are Owen White, Professor of Epidemiology and Public Health and Associate Director of the Institute for Genome Sciences at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, and Dirk Havers is Group Leader Microbial Systems and Communities at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Chris Hayes will be joining us. Chris says in his latest book, Twilight of the Elites, that the foundation of our shared life as Americans, where we worship, where we deposit our paychecks, the teams we root for, the people who do our business in Washington, seems to be cracking before our very eyes. The result, we operate in a world in which we can assume neither competence nor good faith from the authorities, and the consequences of this simple, devastating realization is the defining feature of American life at the end of this low and dishonest decade. Chris Hayes with us tomorrow at 10. Let's go back to phone calls as we talk about this fascinating human microbiome project. Mary in Eau Claire is our next caller. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm wondering, we've been talking mostly about the gut, but I'm wondering about the respiratory system, about bacteria in the sinuses and lungs, and whether this has anything to do with rise in allergies and asthma. Has anyone studied this, or do you have any ideas?
Yeah, so I'm at the Institute for Genome Sciences here at University of Maryland, and there's an investigator here, Rebecca Brotman, who has started to look at some respiratory studies, in particular looking at the impact of smoking on the microbiome. So that's one possible resource or an investigator that may be publishing soon on that topic. And then when it comes to asthma, I think asthma is an incredibly complex disease, and part of it may certainly involve what's in the respiratory system, but also probably a close association between that and the immune system. And so there may be a role that the microbiome is playing with the immune system, and that may ultimately also impact things like asthma. And I'm aware of some other studies that are certainly looking at the oral cavity, nasal cavity, and sort of maybe doing baseline studies to understand the bacterial communities there. And I'm not directly aware of anything else happening with asthma. Or Dirk, you know anything?
No, I don't have any additions of your own.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you, Mary, so much for the call. Diana in Waukesha, hi.
Hi. My question is, how does the PrEP and also how does a colonoscopy affect the ecology of the gut? And then I would like to recommend a wonderful book on ecology called The Body Ecology Diet. It's Recovering Your Health and Rebuilding Your Immunity. Again, it's The Body Ecology Diet.
Okay, let's go to the colonoscopy.
I don't think it's been tested, and so they're not really in a position to know for sure. I think there have been a number of studies that start to kind of look at recolonization. So if you imagine that colonoscopy might perturb the gut in some way, the bigger question is how long would it take for that system to kind of restore back to its normal balance. And I do think that there are some studies there, but I don't know about the results right offhand. But, I think the important question is, what are the longer-term impacts? Would it permanently change the microbial system there, or is that something that where it could just sort of bounce back after a few days or weeks?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, and also the pointer to the diet, I think, is very interesting. Again, I'm just exhilarated by the period of history we're in, and I think this is going to be a great time to start investigating the relationship between our diet and sort of the larger ecological health of
right. Yeah. So where are you gentlemen going now? This project is done. What will each of you be doing? We have about 30 seconds left.
Quick answer is, for me, it's all going to be about diseases, inflammatory disorders, looking at it with combining not only the technologies we use in this particular project, but the next levels, trying to really look in multiple ways at this interaction between the microbes and our host, and especially in, when it goes wrong into disease.
Mm-hmm. Owen?
Well, I say this partly jokingly. I'm going to be vigilantly trying to get funding to continue the research. My group is very much involved in data management and making sure that the research community is able to make use of this information, and that's what we've been doing for the last 5 years, and we'll certainly be continuing to work on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both so much. What a fascinating hour it has been. Thank you. Our guests, Owen White, Professor of Epidemiology and Public Health and Associate Director of the Institute for Genome Sciences at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Dirk Havers, Group Leader, Microbial Systems and Communities at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard. Go to our Facebook page to get more information about this fascinating five-year study. One of our guests is tweeting all the time, so you can be directed to the tweets via Facebook. What a world we're living in. Tweets and Facebook and all of that. So it's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this highly interesting show, and to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee. Until tomorrow.